Charles Darwin changed forever our understanding of life on Earth. As he later recalled, he owed his achievements in science to the 5-year voyage on the Beagle around the world. We tend to think of him as the bearded old man, but the Darwin of the Beagle was a 22-year-old Cambridge graduate. It all began in 1831. Victoria would not come to the throne for another 6 years, and Darwin was just a promising young gentleman naturalist, invited as a companion to Captain Fitzroy. The Beagle's mission was to survey the coast of South America and take a line of measurements around the world. Darwin decided to keep a personal diary, not a record of facts, but of my thoughts, he later wrote. The diary is an intimate and wonderfully charming record. Throughout the voyage, he sent it home in installments to his family in Shrewsbury. It is now preserved by English Heritage at his former home, Down House, which is now a museum, just south of London. Darwin was not just exploring, but also reading. The Beagle contained a state-of-the-art library of over 400 volumes, so Darwin, in his tiny cabin, examined his specimens and soaked up the scientific learning of his age. Nevertheless, he spent most of the voyage on inland expeditions, and only 18 months were spent at sea.
I had been wandering about North Wales on a geological tour when I arrived home on the 29th of August, 1831. My sisters informed me of the letters offering to me the place in the Beagle. I immediately said I would go, but the next morning, finding my father so much averse to the whole plan, I wrote to refuse the offer. However, I found every member of the family so strongly on my side that I determined to make another effort, and my father most kindly gave his consent. 25th of October, 1831, Devonport. Went on board the Beagle. Found her moored to the active hulk, and in a state of bustle and confusion. The men were chiefly employed in painting the forepart and fitting up the cabins. The last time I saw her in September, she was in the dockyard and looked more like a wreck than a vessel commissioned to go around the world. 26th of October. Wet, cold day. Went on board. Found the carpenters busy fitting up the drawers in the poop cabin. My own private corner looked so small that I cannot help fearing that many of my things must be left behind. But Captain Fitzroy is such an effectual and good-natured contriver that the very drawers enlarge on his appearance, and all difficulties smooth away. 21st of November. Carried all my books and instruments on board the Beagle. For the first time, I felt a fine naval fervour. Nobody could look at her without admiration. About 6 o'clock, a marine, being drunk and whilst crossing from the hulk to another vessel, slipped overboard and was not seen again. His body has not been found. 23rd of November. This has been a very important day in the annals of the Beagle. At 1 o'clock, she sailed about a mile to Barnet Pool. This was to me very interesting. Everything so new and different. The coxswains piping, the manning the yards, the men working at the hawsers to the sound of a fife. But nothing is so striking as the rapidity and decision of the orders and the alertness with which they are obeyed. All the stores are completed, and yesterday 6,000 canisters of preserved meat were stowed away. Not 1 inch of room is lost. The hold would contain scarcely another bag of bread. My notions of the inside of a ship were about as indefinite as those of some men on the inside of a man. Viz., a large cavity containing air, water, and food, mingled in hopeless confusion. 28th of November. Captain Fitzroy gave a very magnificent luncheon to about 40 persons. It was a sort of ship's warming, and everything went off very well. In the evening a waltz was raised, which lasted till everybody went away. 4th of December. I am writing this for the first time on board. It is about 1 o'clock, and I intend sleeping in my hammock. I did so last night, and experienced a most ludicrous difficulty in getting into it. My great fault of jockeyship was in trying to put my legs in first. The hammock being suspended, I thus only succeeded in pushing away without making any progress in inserting my own body. The correct method is to sit in the centre of the bed, and then give yourself a dexterous twist, and your head and feet come into the respective places. I will now go and practice my skill in vaulting into the hammock. 10th of December. The captain said last night that if it was possible, he would sail today. Accordingly, a little after 10, we sailed. We had a pleasant sail till we doubled the breakwater where my misery began. Such a night I never passed. On every side nothing but misery. Such a whistling of the wind and roar of the sea. The hoarse screams and shouts of the men made a concert that I shall not soon forget. On Sunday morning, it was determined to put back to Plymouth and there remain for a more fortunate wind. I am decided I did right to accept the offer, but I yet think it is doubtful how far it will add to the happiness of one's life. I find it necessary to forget the many little comforts which one enjoys on shore almost without perceiving them. Nothing can be done without so much extra trouble. Even a book cannot be taken from the shelves or a piece of soap from the washing stand without making it doubtful whether in one case it is worthwhile to wash one's hands or in the other to read. December 13th. An idle day. Dined for the first time in captain's cabin and felt quite at home. Of all the luxuries the captain has given me, none will be so essential as that of having my meals with him. I am often afraid I shall be quite overwhelmed with the numbers of subjects which I ought to take into hand. The principal objects are first collecting, observing, and reading in all branches of natural history that I possibly can manage, observations in meteorology, French and Spanish, mathematics, and a little classics, perhaps not more than Greek Testament on Sundays. If I have not energy enough to make myself steadily industrious, how great an opportunity of improving myself shall I throw away? 15th of December. The sailors declare there is somebody on shore keeping a black cat under a tub, which it stands to reason must keep us in harbour. 25th of December. Christmas Day is one of great importance to the men. The whole of it has been given up to revelry. At present there is not a sober man in the ship. King is obliged to perform duty of sentry. The last sentinel came staggering below, declaring he would no longer stand on duty, whereupon he is now in irons, getting sober as fast as he can. Wherever they may be, they claim Christmas Day for themselves, and this they exclusively give up to drunkenness. December 26th. An excellent day for sailing, but the opportunity has been lost, owing to the drunkenness of nearly the whole crew. The ship has been all day in a state of anarchy. Several sailors have paid the penalty for insolence by sitting for 9 hours in heavy chains. 27th of December. Weighed anchor at 11 o'clock. We joined the Beagle outside the breakwater, and immediately, with every sail filled by a light breeze, we scudded away at the rate of 8 knots an hour. December 31st. Wretchedly out of spirits and very sick. Got up about noon and enjoyed some few moments of comparative ease. A shoal of porpoises dashing round the vessel and a stormy petrel skimming over the waves were the first objects of interest I have seen. Nothing could be better adapted for cheering the heart of a seasick man. January 1st, 1832. The new year to my jaundiced senses bore a most gloomy appearance. This and 3 following days were ones of unceasing suffering. I was so sick that I could not get up, even to see Madeira, when within 12 miles. February 29th. The day has passed delightfully. Delight itself, however, is a weak term to express the feelings of a naturalist who, for the first time, has been wandering by himself in a Brazilian forest. Among the multitude of striking objects, the general luxuriance of the vegetation bears away the victory. The elegance of the grasses and novelty of the parasitical plants, the beauty of the flowers, the glossy green of the foliage, all tend to this end. A most paradoxical mixture of sound and silence pervades the shady parts of the wood. The noise from the insects is so loud that it may be heard even in a vessel anchored several hundred yards away from the shore. Yet within the recesses of the forest, a universal peace appears to reign. To a person fond of natural history, such a day as this brings with it a deeper pleasure than he ever can hope again to experience. We made the coast of Tierra del Fuego. The Beagle had never visited this part before, so that it was new to everybody. Our ignorance whether any natives lived here was soon cleared up by the signal of smoke. A party of Fijians were watching us. They were perched on a wild peak overhanging the sea. As we passed by, they all sprang up, and waving their cloaks of skin, sent forth a loud, sonorous shout. The captain sent a boat with a large party of officers to communicate with the Fijians. As soon as the boat came within hail, one of the four men who advanced to receive us began to shout most vehemently and pointed out a good landing place. This was, without exception, the most curious and interesting spectacle I ever beheld. I would not have believed how entire the difference between savage and civilized man is. It is greater than between a wild and domesticated animal, inasmuch as in man there is greater power of improvement. The chief spokesman was old. The three others were young, powerful men about 6 feet high. From their dress they resembled the representations of devils on the stage. The old man had a white feather cap, from under which black long hair hung around his face. The skin is dirty copper colour. Reaching from ear to ear, and including the upper lip, there was a broad red coloured band of paint, and above this there was a white one. The only garment was a large guanaco skin, and this was merely thrown over their shoulders. Their very attitudes were abject and the expression distrustful. Having given them some red cloth, which they immediately placed around their necks, we became good friends. This was shown by the old man patting our breasts and making something like the same noise which people do when feeding chickens. He then bared his bosom for us to return the compliment, which being done, he seemed highly pleased. Their chief anxiety was to obtain knives. This they showed by pretending to have blubber in their mouths and cutting instead of tearing it from the body. They are excellent mimics. Some of the officers began to make monkey-like faces, but one of the young men was most successful in making still more hideous grimaces. When a song was struck up, I thought that they would have fallen down with astonishment, and with equal delight they viewed our dancing and immediately began themselves to waltz with one of the officers. These Fijians were quite naked, and even one full-grown woman was absolutely so. It was raining heavily, and the fresh water, together with the spray, trickled down her body. In another harbour not far distant, a woman who was suckling a recently born child came one day alongside the vessel and remained there out of mere curiosity, whilst the sleet fell and thawed on her naked bosom and on the skin of her naked baby. If their appearance is miserable, their manner of living is still more so. Their food chiefly consists in limpets and mussels, together with seals and a few birds. They must also catch occasionally a guanaco. They seem to have no property excepting bows and arrows and spears. Their present residence is under a few bushes by a ledge of rock. It is no way sufficient to keep out rain or wind. I believe if the world was searched, no lower grade of man could be found. Their whole conduct was such an odd mixture of astonishment and imitation that nothing could be more laughable and interesting. Two of the officers, who are both fairer and shorter than the others, although possessed of large beards, were, we think, taken for ladies. I wish they would follow our supposed example and produce their squaws. In the evening we parted very good friends, which I think was fortunate, for the dancing and skylarking had occasionally bordered on a trial of strength.